So, guys, I decided to do this. Yeah, let's do this.
Yo, this is Creator Talks, episode with Easy.
What's happening?
One of my favorite poets. I mean, like, I don't say that stuff. Like, you know, some people are like, that's my favorite whatever. I mean, I literally see you as one of my favorite poets, I think. Like, art experiences. There's a lot of things that people don't understand what I call by art experiences. It's like, I remember seeing you at Book Cafe back in the day.
Yep.
And there was a lot of purity in communication and what you felt about poetry that you were doing. I think there's a lot of, like, take me back to that. Like, I think a lot of people don't even understand. They just see you as a poet on stage.
So, the Book Cafe was like a rite of passage of sorts. Because it's the one place that afforded people who wanted to be part of the industry in a serious way an opportunity to actually sharpen their craft, but also to belong to a community of people who were already part of the industry, who knew something and who were on a journey towards something. Because I remember when I started, it's because I used to attend shows at the Manningberg a lot, and one of my favorite shows to attend at the time, it's either it was The Circle or it was my show called The Spoken Word Event. Being a hip-hop head, I really liked The Circle, but also Mashoko was started to become more of my type of vibe, because it had the spoken word element, and there was I vibe more with the MCs there than the MCs that were at The Circle, and it was more my vibe. So being at the Mashoko Spoken Word Event, I remember I watched Upmost perform with Stan on guitar.
That was dope.
I remember exactly how I felt, and that feeling has never gone away since. And it's for the first time in my life I said, I wanna connect like that too. Not I wanna make art like that. No, it was like I wanna connect on that level too. And the connection now, when I started to pursue art, it was not just about poetry. Poetry was the preferred medium to start with, but poetry is one way to express that, or being on the air is another way to express that, or writing a book or creating a campaign or whatever it is. But it was about pursuing how that moment felt and how it impacted how I saw my world at the time. And that's always the campus for me. Whenever I do anything. So when people then saw me on stage, it was the pursuit of that life-changing moment when I saw Upmost perform with Stan on guitar. And it felt so authentic. It felt like this guy was in his element, in his space, in a comfortable place where this is who he is in his most natural state, if I could call it that. And that's what I've always been pursuing. And so when you saw me on stage, I guess that's what the pursuit has always been. And that's still the pursuit, actually.
So when I really think about it, right, I link a lot of my move towards writing about culture and so forth to Book Cafe, because thanks to Paul Brickhill, rest in peace, he created an environment where I remember if you ever chat with Fungai Zimbojam, myself, we were
he
like
was
the
so
guys
kind
of
to me.
Oh, he's fucking amazing. I love him. So I love to him, yeah, to death. And the funny thing is, people used to think that he and I used to compete, and not realizing that no, we actually used to be like sometimes the only two people covering stuff north of Samora.
Right.
Like the art north of Samora did not exist according to places like the Herald.
True.
That, like, there was nothing happening at
if
Book
Cafe. If it was
Cafe.
Not in town, it didn't exist anywhere else, or in the popular spaces like Bamzinda,
Sungura Vibes.
Or Mereki.
But what we were afforded is we're able to connect with people. And I understand you can. And isn't it tragic right now that kind of place where you could walk in and see a Chionisa sitting in the corner there, or seeing Oliver Mtukudzi sitting there having his meeting with someone else, is met them at the book cafe, or you know, that kind of environment where everyone who was in art felt like there was a safe haven. It's like this, the Sophia Town.
Exactly. Thank you for bringing up Sophia Town. It was a utopia of sorts, and I think because it was a meeting of minds where everyone...
By the way, everybody, I'm just opening a beer.
Everyone who was in that space was some sort of a purist within their preferred art form or preferred path. They were a purist. So it was so common for you to walk in there and meet a Chuoniso, and Chuoniso is so kind to you. It's as if she has known you for years.
Yep.
I'd never experienced that before, because these are people I used to look up to. These are people I used to always see and be like, yo, Chuoniso. The moment I see Chuoniso, but I remember meeting Chuoniso for the first time in the book cafe. She was having a meeting with Penny.
Mm.
And I couldn't believe my eyes. Like, is that Chuoniso? Yes, it's Chuoniso.
The Chuoniso.
Then Andy Brown met him in the same way. I met almost any artist you can think of, watch them perform in that space. And just because everyone who was in that space was in pursuit of something that was bigger than themselves. So you wouldn't get in there and you would feel like you needed to be a fan, or you were a fan of these people, but they didn't make you feel like one. Because the goal was bigger than just, it was not a selfish place.
And it was a community.
It was a community. Everyone was
home.
Adding to that community. I remember I would go to the book cafe, right? Even on my brokest day, when I didn't have anything, I didn't have transport money or anything, I would always go to the book cafe, watch a dope show, meet an incredible human being, and meet someone who was willing to give me an ear and to help me out to get to the next level. Like, that's how incredible that space was.
Now, don't you think, like, when you look at the tragedy of it all, is that I see a lot of cats coming out in music right now and they don't have performance experience. Like,
right.
A lot of guys produce a lot of songs that sound nice on production. And my confidence of MCing and so forth is enhanced by MCing for free at Book Cafe.
Same year. I remember there was a time I used to host the Poetry Slam. I was the MC for a long time for the open mic on Mondays, right? And that was like the training ground, and you're doing it for free. And what made the Book Cafe so great was it was a performance first type of place, where because people are coming there to sharpen their craft, and the only way you could see how someone was developing within their craft is you're consistently seeing them on stage developing, right? Mm. Whether you're a poet, you're a dancer, or whatever it is. So a lot of the people I know, people who had great careers as performing artists before they even had before they recorded a song out.
Mike Anity
was one of those. Bashupi for a long time.
Dada D.
A lot of those cats were.
Even if you look at Comrade Fatso.
Yes. And these were great performers. And even I came from that before I even ever recorded a poem or anything. I was performing for people. And for a long time, the people who liked what I did, it's because I had performed for them.
Yeah.
Right? So now recording became the other thing to add to what people were already connecting with. And there was a great balance. Now, people are recording artists first. So, and yeah, a lot of it is underwhelming when you watch them perform, and the experience is if I was to use the word horrible, maybe it's a bit harsh, but it's horrible. A lot of them don't know how to perform. They can't even handle a mic, or they don't even know how to communicate with the audience, or how to create a set. they got a string of great records, but they don't even know how to build it to be a set or to tell a story with the set. And now it's a lot, man. But Book Cafe was that place, and I loved it for everything it was.
So do you know that Ja Praiser? The start of open mic at Book Cafe.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Shut the front door.
Third generation band. That was on a competition called Book Cafe Exposure.
Of course I remember Book Cafe Exposure.
So Ja Praiser performs at Book Cafe. It wasn't called Ja Praiser in that. It was called Third Generation Band. And Hope Masike?
Of course. So.
Do you know that Victor Kulunga started open mic?
Get out of here.
Chiwaniso, open mic. So what I'm saying is that, let's go back to the Ja Praiser story, because it's actually interesting. He performs at Book Cafe. We're recording in a car, so if you guys, cool kids, understanding what sounds happening, that's what happens. We're podcasting, it's Quiddy talking, and we're having a conversation. So, look, Ja Praiser records, goes and performs open mic at Book Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what number he came through and, you know, performed and all that other stuff. But everybody, then after that, he goes and performs at Josh Wojeri's Jazz 24. And
there was that joint.
There was Jazz 24. Remember, like, you can name a bunch of live spaces that existed. Now you can't. Even if you open up Zimbabwe right now, they're not.
Harare. I can't even think of one.
You can't think of any. That's why you now have these places where the guys might have a deal with a, what you call it, with a bar. But what Book Cafe did for you is, when you came to open mic night, the audience that was there last week is not the same as the audience. They're not your fans.
You've got a new audience every week.
That means you have to have your act on point. You gotta get your shit on point. Otherwise,
you gotta be dope.
Gotta be dope. That's it.
You gotta be dope.
And sometimes people are gonna say, anadiru.
Mbeu. I remember Mbeu was part of a band called Tret. Days Tret. I used to be the MC at the open mic.
Who was Savannah Africa?
Savannah Afros. Yeah.
That was a hot chick from Savannah. The one went to Germany and just disappeared.
What's her name? Rutendo. Machiridza.
Machiridza. Oof. Yeah, she was hot.
Okay. She was really
hot. I mean, she's probably still hot.
No, I haven't seen her in a long time. Her in, so,
like, but I mean, like, I hope she's not like dead. Then,
no, no, weird. I'm sure she's there.
No, but I mean, COVID. You know, COVID is twisted.
True, but we hope not.
So I'm just saying, hope she's not dead, because we might be talking
with the locks.
Oh
my God! And at the time you had the Book Cafe, you had Zimbabwe German Society. Alliance was in full swing.
Mm-hmm.
Delta Gallery.
Remember the first show called, was it Alliance?
That's still one of my favorite shows. It was at the Manningberg and Alliance.
And Alliance, and because remember there was Akala, and then came through. And the New York rapper
Hired Gun.
I remember being, they did it in the car park,
bro, the showcase where even what's his name performed there. This is where, do you remember when Outspoken was performing with Suniva, the chick with the violin?
Oh.
Guys, I miss those dudes, though.
But the thing is, what we're also talking about is that a lot of the art was going into the public domain.
Right.
Like, a lot of that art is like, I'm going to share things with people who enjoy it.
And there was a community. Wait. The Ja Praiser story. You need to finish that story.
Oh, so Ja Praiser then goes to what's the name of this guy's name? Josh Wojeri's bar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's performing there. And there's some point that I remember going to shows a couple of times. And at that time, people were like, "This competition." I remember Mike Anity used to think it was competition. It's kind of silly because they were different.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he called him Ja Praiser. So maybe it's a couple of ignorant people called him. Plus, also trying to get at the reggae space.
But he was also in the reggae dancehall space.
He was actually in that space.
Yeah, he was in the reggae dancehall
space. Yes, but there was a time that he just flipped, because the thing is, There was a time, I think, when I was performing there, and he performed to, and shout out to Josh Bougere from being very patient with him. There was a time I was performing there, and the owners used to try to pay Josh to say, if we can pay you for this guy to stop singing. Because he's totally boring.
But also, you see what was happening at the time. There was an appetite for live music.
There is an appetite for live
music. There is, right? Because now people make it seem like there is no appetite for live music.
But the thing is, I think the other side is that we don't have enough daring investors.
What do you mean? Explain.
The guy from Paul Brickhill.
Paul Brickhill.
He was daring. He was like, I'm going to go 1980s. He sets up his band. And then he starts hooking up a luxury blues and so forth. He starts playing the saxophone. Like, you know, they set up through D-Mob money, right?
No.
Oh. I got so much to tell you.
So, you see, of the three people that I wish I would have interviewed before they passed, I really would have wanted to interview Paul Brickhill, Fortune Mparutsa, and Tendai Mfuruza.
Of those, I didn't record it, but a lot of my understanding of the world came through Paul Brickhill. Like,
it's Paul Brickhill, though. How do you create that? That guy was... What? Even when I started to hear about his contribution in the struggle and that he was... ZAPU affiliated, yep. And what?
And yeah, you go to his house. I kid you not. Louis Armstrong.
Louis
visited him at his damn house.
The Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
Yes.
Uncle
Louis.
Satchmo, that dude.
What?
Yep. That family is steeped in so much heritage.
I need to make a piece about them.
There's so much heritage. I think that the thing why a lot of this stuff is important to me, sometimes we always act like we're the first.
We're not.
In spite of the fact that we may be the first to create an outlet in terms of how we communicate as the medium for communication in
right.
what it is. But we're not the first ones to communicate with. A lot of the things is a case of, you know, I'm the first. And I'm one of the first people to create a podcast, but I wasn't the first person to communicate. And for me, my main thing was just to communicate. And it remains my main thing.
So what you're explaining right now is the reason why I like telling the stories that I tell as a communicator and storyteller. Because we're living in a time where if we're not careful, we might... Everything is made to seem as if the people who came before us did not do anything.
Yep, it's what Bill Maher called progressophobia.
So, personally, I always want to tell that story. We need to tell how great Bundu Boys was.
Or bad. So
bad, yes. And
so
how bad
say,
they
okay,
were.
No, they were not good at that.
They were not good at that.
But that
they
is part of the story.
That's part of the story. So that we can be progressive in how we learn. And because a lot of the times, for example, when people talk about Mokomba and the things that Mokomba are doing right now, right, which is phenomenal. But guess what? Bundu Boys was doing that in the 80s.
100%.
Right?
Augustum Sarurwa.
They were doing that in the 80s.
Rest in peace to Prince Msarurwa. Well, you know he's related to Augustum Sarurwa.
I didn't know that.
I just thought it was just a surname.
Yeah.
No, yeah, related.
Oh, okay.
So, but you sit there and you're like, Augustum Sarurwa was out in 1920s, 30s creating jazz music that went to America and became huge.
And this is the thing. What I'm saying is that our culture is so huge that we think we're the first ones to cross borders. We think we're the first ones to be there. But I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, yeah, in Africa, do you realize Miriam Makeba was kicking that shit in the 90s and 80s?
Dorothy Masuka, fam, in the 50s, she was already
kicking. In the 1990s, 1998 FIFA World Cup album, Shumba Zenavu, Thomas Tafirenyika Mafumo
was on that album.
He's on that album. And I see people, like, I disagree with a lot of, not a lot, some things that Thomas Mapfumo says, but I'm never going to disrespect his contribution to the cultural zeitgeist of Africa. Remember, he's the only African on the 1998 FIFA World Cup album.
But see, when that, so what you're explaining right now was the thought process in just creating 99 Lives, the Tish Mataya story, and telling. So the Tish Mataya story wasn't about Tish Mataya. It was an ode to radio, right? That, yo, you see this? This is where it's coming from. And it's, we're regressing, we're not progressing. Because in the 80s, you guys were at the zenith of what was African pop culture. You were leading that as a platform in Radio 3. 30 years later, we are still 30 years behind. We're still doing it like those guys.
Like it was, and it's like one of those when I say, you know, some of the things we call culture, our ancestors would be embarrassed that we're doing the same thing.
Bro, by 1988, when Tich left for South Africa, the system had already started to slow down. By the time we experienced what was the golden years of Radio 3 in the early 90s to mid 90s, the people who had started with it were already saying, no, it's already slowed down. We need bigger. We need better.
We need new energy.
We need new energy. And they kept that system up for the next 30 years. How embarrassing is that?
But, and it's still here right now.
But it's because no one ever told the story or documented it and made it such a spectacle.
Like,
so that
why
we can
did
learn.
We get here? Why are we here?
Why are we here?
And why did we do that back then? And we didn't do it because it was like a cool thing to do. It's because we needed to survive.
Bro.
It's like, I don't understand why we still act like, you know, breakfast radio is still, in a country like Zimbabwe, which is so informalized, is still classified as
the premium.
I'm like, yeah, but you realize a lot of niggas are not leaving home that early anymore.
Chilling at the house. People are chilling at the house. They're not in traffic like that.
I don't know why all talk shows are between 6 and 9 p.m. No, people are not really doing that anymore. Like I don't understand why we don't have a talk radio show, radio station. I mean, like I know that the guys who have tried it have tried too hard to. I don't like being like that guy. Let me give you an example. In the United Kingdom, there's a station called Talk Sport.
Yeah, I like Talk Sport.
For 24 hours, they talk about sport.
And Talk Sport is actually the competitor to Sky Sports and. Sky Sports Audio and BT Sport. I'm forgetting the other sports channel. The audio bouquet version. But TalkSport is actually the leading within the audio space.
A funny story that TalkSport, Sky, didn't Sky buy TalkSport though?
I don't know.
I think they did.
But TalkSport is one of the, because I remember I was even, I was watching a lot of TalkSport shows on commentary on the Euros, where they used to have Mourinho
on YouTube.
Yeah. I was like,
that shit is dope.
Okay, that was super dope. But that was actually for their radio show. That's how brilliant it is.
But do you realize that they make talk radio so interesting that you could spend 6 hours listening to sport? But they don't make the thing is, I think there is that necessity you talked about with Tishmataz, that necessity to think about radio as less radio than it was 20 years ago.
But also, as long as radio, for us, they are still thinking about selling time, they're not going to get it right. Because we have to move from selling time to selling content.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That it's no longer, what we're selling is not about the time. So the reason why the whole breakfast radio or drive time radio.
Because it's time.
Because they're selling time.
Which got to happen between 6 and 9.
6 and 9 because people are driving. There are a lot of assumptions. So what we should, where we should be at is where we were, where we have, where would have graduated to say, what's our society like?
Who are we?
How do these people behave?
Do we like this?
Do we like this, or because we're trying to have like
a template?
A template that actually doesn't work for us.
And the other thing, like I say, most people in this country are unemployed, and I think that's a lot of also how when you look at the different game. Sorry, I just deviating again to the live spaces. I'm a big passionate person about live spaces. Like a lot of people who set up live spaces. If you went to Josh Wojeri's place in Jazz 105, it was a different experience from Book Cafe, but they never felt that they were stealing crowds from each other.
It was a different space from the usual place.
Yep.
It was a different experience from On the Roof. It was a different experience from the next space and the next space and the next space and the next space. And you'd go there in peak season and all those spaces and people. Even when that jazz band was playing at this place and Ningi was playing at that space and Ningi was playing at that space, and they all had people who gathered around those experiences. But also we have to take into consideration that the demographics, the audiences changed over time, because the generation, the audience that's in the market right now that should be attending those things, a lot of them actually don't have a lot of disposable income.
I don't know if people don't have disposable income because people are drinking a lot. People are still going doing things a lot. It's not true. Like people have stopped trying to have fun.
Or we just haven't convinced them. Or we just haven't curated great enough experiences.
I don't know. I just think we businessify too much of just natural experience. So when a person is sitting there and they're saying they're setting up a live performance, they're treating themselves like a club, not a live performance space. They're treating themselves like they are competing with
the bar. No, you're not.
So I mean, when you really look at about it, you start thinking, okay, are we assuming what people are interested in?
Mm.
Let's look at it this way: Ja Prayzah is huge. Because a lot of people have watched him live on stage. He used to go and perform at schools.
Tukwenda kwa Ja.
Kwa Ja.
Yeah, tukwenda kwa Ja.
That statement, kwa Ja, it means we know him personally.
Tukwenda kwa Ja. And there are people who would go to jazz shows every week. Every week.
I know people who would even go to another town.
Kwenda kwa Ja. Eh? Tukwenda kwa Ja.
Not like he is at Book Cafe. No. Kwaari kwacho.
Do you remember even the Alexio days of Kuchina?
Kuchina.
Tukwenda Kuchina. Kuchina was a big thing, bro.
My nigga, I got memories from Kuchina. Where you're just sitting there, you're like, yeah. Like, everybody like, we're waiting for Shaina. But also they know his new music. And also, you know what a lot of these artists did? They debut a lot of their songs on stage before they went to studio.
So the song would be a hit on stage with the audience, yes, way before the song is recorded.
By the time you get to the studio, by the way, time is out, the audience already loves it. And therefore your sales in terms of ticket sales.
That's,
and you could be one of those guys. Oh, you guys are getting on there.
So that's the Fela Kuti model. Only that fella was a bit extreme. He would even go to say the moment he cuts a record, that it's now recorded, he won't perform it. He stops performing.
No way.
Because you now have it at your house.
Because the moment has been crystallized. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, so he would perform it. You would perform this song. But and the day he cuts the record and the record is out, it's done. He's not going to perform it again. Because you can now keep it at your house.
Yeah. So
you can keep my performance at your house.
God damn.
that was fascinating. I was like, oh my god.
So dude, I hate the word content because it removes the artistic aspect, right? It just boxes everything. Whether you're doing a talk show about health and you're doing a talk show about and somebody performing on stage, you're just defined as content. So everybody just kind of thinks like,
yeah, there's a subject in school that was called content. But within content, there was social studies, religious education, environmental science. There were 9 different subjects that were just packed in there and just. But when you wrote it in grade 7, they would call it general paper. But it had all these things in there that could stand a standalone subject. So I think I get your why you don't like the word content, because yeah, it removes identity.
It pretends that there isn't, it's one of the least valued subjects, because everybody talks about, oh, you passed maths and English, thank goodness. If you flunked content, no one cared.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you got like the 4, 8, 12 points at what is it? Just 4 points.
Units.
4 units. What units was it? I don't know.
It was one unit. The one unit is like you killed it.
So if you had like 4 units per, what does it mean? Anyway, whatever it is, the bad thing. Dude, this is like, for me, it's like 20 years ago, 30 years ago or something. I don't know. But it's that aspect that we've taken the joy out of a lot of things by putting them in a box and say, figure it out.
Right.
Like we've said, okay, watching Beyonce on stage performing is the same as the World Health Organization putting out a broadcast on coronavirus, because it's just content.
Or watching a Quentin Tarantino movie is the same as watching
Mnangagwa giving a speech,
because it's all content.
It's all content. It's like, well, they've got an equivalent value according to so-called creatives, because they're all content.
That's rubbish, right?
But that's how it is.
Yeah, but exactly. Now that you put it like that, it's rubbish.
Like, because I'm sitting there, I'm like,
for me, it's the same as someone who says, what are you doing? They say, I'm a creative. What do you mean you're a creative?
We all create.
We all create, bro.
A carpenter is creating.
Yes. Like, what do you mean you're a creative?
No, I create content. Like, what? What is it?
I create content. What kind of content do you create?
It reminds me of a conversation with Oliver Mtukudzi. When he said, I had to go and get a passport because I had this opportunity with multi-choice to go to Mauritius at some point. Amazing experience. But he said to me, Larry, when you go to the passport office, when they ask you what your job is, don't write artist. Write writer. Because the world must know that whenever you carry a passport and go through, you are a writer, not just an artist. Because an artist could be a guy who anoveza, or you could be any. You could be a singer. You could
write, Larry.
I'm a writer.
Exactly. This is what I do.
The fact
I write.
That I do radio and other immature. No. The fact that I've performed.
I'm a writer.
Your key thing that we all know you for is you're a writer.
I'm a filmmaker. I'm a broadcaster. I'm a this. I'm a...
You might be able to do a whole bunch of other things.
Yes. But what do you do? Like, what's the essence of what you do? All right. All right,
Stuart. There's that Benjamin Franklin guy, the former president of the United States. Everybody forgets that he invented a whole bunch of other things. But his main thing was fucking president.
And people remember him for that. That is on the 100.
Yeah.
He's on the 100 right now.
So, So I go back, like, and I think it's also lended to the degrading quality of content. We're going to use that word for now. Okay, of product. I'm going to call it product.
Of content. Let's use it for now.
Of content going out, because it's became a product, not an experience.
True.
Like, I was sitting in Twitter spaces the other day, and everybody talked about, you need to be authentic and so forth. You need to, don't be scared of what this or what the other. In this conversation, I'm like, I hear what you're saying, but I also know that I tell people that when I say I'm a writer, people think that it's, I need inspiration to write. I'm like, no, actually, it's a job. My job is to write. Whether I'm inspired or not is not important.
I have to write.
The client needs written work by this date, or my publisher needs this information, media finish this, or whatever it is.
That advertising agency needs this copy by this date.
I don't.
It's not about inspiration.
It's not,
bro.
Like when we sit here and we're like, let's have some tequilas. I do ask, because it's rubbish that all of the content is just bunched into one. If you're content this, you're also content that. And I think it's also the reason why some people then invite the wrong people to events. Because you're like, yeah, because you're X brand, you're not really looking at how to target certain audiences, because you're good at that audience. So that's why you then say, you look at an X brand. I don't want to name anyone at this point. The X brand, who is not necessarily got an audience that pays for a certain product, right. But because they have a lot of product out there, content out there, then therefore people just jump onto it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask themselves, like, why isn't this turning into sales? But because you jumped onto the guy who, when we watch, you're not looking at it as saying that I love this content, and therefore I'm going to buy the content, buy what they like.
Well, now that you put it like that, I totally connect with what you're saying, because I think I subconsciously had the same gripes with the concept of content or creatives without really giving it a lot of thought. But now that you put it like that, I'm like, yeah, actually, I hate it. I don't like it.
Why the fuck would you call it content?
Plus, it blurs out everything.
It stops you from being an artist. It stops you from... Like, no one went onto radio and said, we're going to play some content.
Plus, even back in the day, remember, someone would say, they wouldn't just say, I'm an artist. But what kind of artist are you? Are you a poet? Are you a fine artist? Within the fine... world,
you
are
have
you a
to be
painter?
Something specific.
Are you a sculptor? Do you do mixed media? What do you do?
So do you think in a certain way that has affected appetite for art?
Pretty much, because everything is now glossed over and it's very generalized.
Because YouTube will give you, you just watch a job appraiser video, and on the side they also tell you some other thing that has to do with speech given by so forth. I don't know, actually, if you gave me more of music, I'd like that.
Because that's
and
why
also
I'm
the
here.
Same type of music, give me that. But you're now telling me also watch suggestions are not even related to
what I've been watching. But also then it then comes back to people like us who are also creators. Within the space, creators within the space, mm-hmm. Like, because you, as a writer, you're creating. As someone who writes but is a poet or is a someone who tells stories in a certain regard through interviewing people or whatever it is, we then have a responsibility to then inform our audiences of some of those nuances. Because the audience is exactly that. The audience, they get what we give them.
It's the same way I've been telling people, I don't think that scientists and doctors should speak to the public. They make us panic.
Yes. The information should be translated by people who are in the communication space, to say by broadcasters, by people who understand how to communicate to audiences, to say, yo, this is then how we translate this information to make it palatable over there, so that these people don't panic, they don't...
And they get the right behavior.
Yeah, because that's what we do. We stand at the place where we influence behavior. Damn.
But then I'm going to ask you, though, babe, you as a poet...
Uh-huh.
I think a big part of poetry, I'm just going to speak to the poetry aspect of you, because I know there's a lot more to you.
Right.
Do you feel like poetry is an interpretation of behavior and then making it more a concept in which people find it palatable to hear conversations that they would normally not have before? Think of it like stand-up comedy, where Dave Chappelle can tackle certain strong topics but be able to make a joke about them.
Spoken word poetry, poetry and comedy are all part of the spoken word fraternity, right? It's mm-hmm. all spoken
yeah,
word.
Yeah.
Or even live storytelling, all of that is part of the spoken word fraternity, like the awful underspoken word. So it's almost similar in that there's the subject who is the subject, aka the artist, that's then weaving words to either tell a story humorously or to either tell a story beautifully.
Mm, mm, mm.
Humorously, that's the comedian. Beautifully, that's the poet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Because poet is going to get on stage and is going to talk to me about Africa, but in a way I've never seen Africa before. So it's not that I don't know Africa, but they're just telling me in such a beautiful way that I never imagined. But that's one layer. But there's also the layer where the poet is able to do that, but is also able to hide, but to carefully layer within that expression.
Be able to use irony, for example.
Irony, hyperbole, all those things. Hyperbole, whatever. All those things. To layer them within and actually add a thought process, an idea, a concept, and where it's no more than just them, what do you call this, reflecting their society or making us see things in a beautiful way or imagine them in a beautiful way, but where it's now like, snap, I hadn't thought about that idea. And that's what Dave Chappelle does. Dave Chappelle, it's humor, yes, but within that he's going to champion ideas in there, and he's going to seed a thought about how not only he sees the world, but how he also thinks the world ought to be. And poetry does the same as well. So, yeah.
So then, given that context, do you feel like in a certain way, because I'll give you an example. When I went to watch, a performance by this guy, he makes amazing music, Enzo Aisho.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, okay. I can actually hear this performance without needing to watch it when performing. It's not going to do anything.
Right.
It's the same thing with Soulja Love when they performed, and a lot of the rappers.
There's nothing else to it than what it already is.
But isn't that based on the fact that we certain, in a large way, a lot of people experience content on a basis of multi-screens?
Explain further.
So you're watching a TV show, but you can also tweet, and you can also have music, or you can WhatsApping.
Gotcha. No, I understand. Maybe, or we could be experiencing, because it's I think the space has always been layered, if we were to be honest, because the Maskiri is existed in the same space where an Outspoken was, right? Mike Ainiti was existing in the same place where a Kooligan in Calabash were existed. So I think it's also about who's consuming and where are they being consumed. Because in the same place where an Outspoken was performing with the band, with violin and with all these things, a lot of with Veeam Karate, and they're doing incredible things. There was also Maskiri on the other side performing with him and his DJ and the CD, and they are literally using a backtrack.
Mustana as well.
Yeah, so I think it's that. I think we need that balance, because in the same place that Enzo Aishal exists, there's also Cynic who exists.
Yeah, Cynic needs to come back though.
So I think that balance is necessary.
So then, is it a case of sometimes over the arguing over the purists?
I think so, and I think also as purists we forget. I think we're guilty of thinking that everyone thinks like us.
Yep.
We're guilty of that. Everyone doesn't think like us. In fact, 98% of the people are not purists.
True.
As purists, we go the extra mile to want to explore the essence of a thing. That's not how everyone else thinks. Everyone else, to be honest, and this might sound very harsh, but after working in the media for so long, a lot of the people don't have time. Not that they don't have time. They actually, everything that they consume or that they think that is suggested to them. It's suggested to them by the person who...
But I believe in the don't have time philosophy, because one of the reasons I love DSTV for me is because it tells me what's available. Whereas if I go to just a streaming platform, I have to look for things.
Yeah, but a person like you, you have developed your palate so much that you understand what you like.
No, but what I'm just saying
outside
is that...
Outside of what's suggested to you.
No, but what I'm
that's
saying
why you listen
is that
to albums,
I hear...
Right?
I'm actually agreeing with you.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that I would sit and I would say, I don't know what Comedy Central is going to give me. I don't know what... investigation, discovery,
that channel,
or Mnet is going to give me, or Super Sport is going to give me, unless it's but knowing that I can go in to I have to look for a channel and watch, or I have to look for a show
and then try and see if you like it and watch it.
I just don't have the time to be investigating what I like.
So here's the thing. So there are two people who exist. A lot of the purists, they don't exist. So,
I'm not saying that at the same time that my tongue has no palate.
Right. I totally understand. I'm about to explain the point developing from what you just said.
Mm.
Where I'm then saying... So a lot of people don't actually have time, or just are not gonna go out there and look and listen to a whole album and know that there's a number 8 that's banging. I remember when Ed Sheeran, I started knowing Ed Sheeran a while ago before he started popping, because I was in pursuit of a certain kind of sound. Then after a while, after it got popular, I remember the album, the Plus album. No, the Multiply album. After the Multiply album, after it came out, I'm on a bus going to Joburg. I'm listening to the album. At the time, the single that was out was Don't. That was the main single. I listened to Thinking Out Loud, and I was like, this song is going to be a banger, right? And true to my words, exactly 2-3 months later, Thinking Out Loud was released as a single. And everyone else was saying this is a new Ed Sheeran song, but it was on the album, because they don't actually listen to albums, because they are waiting for the song to be suggested to them. Come out as a video, so that it's curated to them, and a lot of that. So purists, that we exist on the end, we don't exist on the consumer's end.
We're on the creative end.
Yes, we're on the creative end. We are on the curator's end. We're supposed to curate because we are purists. We can tell the difference between... I was laughing at someone recently and I said, Zimbabwe is we're at a place where people can't tell good media from bad media. They can't tell a good written article from a bad written article, right? Because we haven't developed lately because a lot of the media was just monopolized. So we can't tell. There are not too many great players. We can tell great curating from great... We can tell great interview from not so great interview, right? So the guy who did a horrible job and the guy
as
who did
a... As long as they agreed with your opinion, you think they're great.
You think they're great, but this is bad journalism. This is bad, bad, bad. But we can't tell. The reason why we can't tell is because a lot of it has been in one place and it's been made to feel a certain kind of way. So as purists... Right, you will notice that the reason exactly Book Cafe, the reason why it felt like that, because it was a meeting of minds who were purists.
And you're like, it's okay for that to be different because it's a Book Cafe.
So that's why the Book Cafe, it was okay for people to come and learn their craft, because they are purists. We were purists in that space. But what we forgot to do was in that space, a lot of us, or is that they saw that as the they didn't take their art beyond the purest stage.
But then the question is,
they didn't take it to the
Book Cafe's responsibility.
No. That's what I'm saying. A lot of the people. Went
oh, you mean
there.
The people who were benefiting from the system?
Yeah, the purists came through to perform.
That's why some people got stuck on open mic for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
or women's open mic.
Women's open mic, because they never took their craft to the consumer's end. Because the consumers will always take what they're given. Fact. And we've observed this over the years.
Yeah.
That's why you can tell the next best new... Like you could tell when Cardi B was being pushed by big media to be what's next. And honestly speaking, guys, if it was a talent issue, I don't think, if we're to be honest, Cardi B is the best rapper out there, or she's even an exceptional rapper. She's not. But guess what it is? Suggestion. Someone is curating that.
And says, you know what? Actually...
And they're thinking of it from a behavior standpoint, and what should be acceptable, what's acceptable, and a lot of these nuances. But because the person on the other side, they're there to just consume, because the only time they get to listen to new music is when they open Trace. And they watch what's on Trace, and that becomes what's on their playlist. And that's what's suggested on Spotify. That's what's suggested on Thingy Thing Thing.
Then I have a question then.
Yeah.
Because I have a sort of like gripe with Zim Hip Hop, for example.
Right.
Where I think the most skilled rappers in this country are women. So if I look at Tasha Miswah, I look at Kiki Badass, I look at... They have the ability to rap differently on different songs. I'm talking about skill. I'm talking about skill alone. Because it's the same thing that Snoop Dogg said the other time. It was just controversial when he said rappers are like da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Every rapper was like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I love a lot of guys like the ASAP. I love a whole lot of cats who are dope at messaging. So there's a lot of dope messaging, but not enough. I actually enjoy this song without needing to care what the message is.
Thank you. So unfortunately, this is where... So as purists, we love hip-hop and we understand it not from a music standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint, from a historical standpoint, from a essence standpoint. We speak hip-hop. Like, we could have a whole conversation about hip-hop and not talk about the music.
It's
going
to be like a whole bunch of 5 hours of us talking about hip-hop.
But in those 5 hours, probably we wouldn't have spoken about the music at all.
More about the culture.
About the culture.
So that's
right?
Why I talk about the music. The music is important. Really.
So, but the novice, like the... I don't want to call them the general mind, right? But the audience that consumes this they could care less about the culture. In fact, they actually don't know that they speak hip-hop, they think hip-hop, and everything, the hip-hop is the new pop that the world around them is shaped around hip-hop, right? How the messaging is and a lot of that. They don't know that. But we know that because we're purists. And unfortunately, the person on the end of the line doesn't care about how good you rap. Do you know what they care about? Is this entertaining for me for it to be on my playlist? No.
I agree with you on that. I'm just talking about the diversity in sound is beginning to get limited.
No.
The audience,
I was going to answer that.
The audience finds the stuff that they can't get locally elsewhere now. So they're saying, all right, because this guy doesn't... this guy could be the next Kendrick Lamar, right? But Kendrick Lamar has got such a wide skill of rap. But you kind of sound like you're singing... You're like Pop Smoke. It's a drill song after the next drill song after the next drill song.
So I can sort of explain why we always find ourselves in such spaces as...
You always find ourselves as
As people who are we come from a very small market. So as small market cats, we're always going to be looking at what's happening within the big market. And when we're looking at what's happening in the big market, so our idea of what's great always comes from the big market, right?
I agree.
So we are always going to be impacted by the big market. So the big market to begin with in Southern Africa is South Africa. So Amapiano is going to come and impact us before any other sound comes and impact us. And Rumba is going to come through and impact us again because it's coming from a big market. Same as Niger music.
So then I have a question.
Wait. I'm going somewhere.
Go with it.
The United States, right? Mm. So unfortunately, people within the small market, especially artists, are always going to be chasing the sound, the skill, and what's happening within the big market if they are not self-aware like a lot of these artists. And unfortunately, a lot of these new artists that are coming up, you don't get the awareness bit of who they are in terms of identity. So that's why it ends up feeling like... So I got the same gripe. Where it's like, why are you all sounding the same? Because you're sounding the same because they're all looking at the same person and they're not doing a lot of looking on the inside.
So, do you know, over the last 10 years, one of my favorite rappers is Drake. You know, artist.
Drake is amazing.
I didn't say rappers, artist.
Drake, because I've seen Drake morph like 5 times.
You're like, oh, you do that as well? Oh, you do
it. Oh, you do that? Oh, you can sing?
Because
oh,
you can sing. You can, now you're doing Afro.
Writer. You're doing Afro. Now you're doing this. And notice when Drake starts doing something, they all start doing that. Because they're always looking
at
the... Yes, but...
But you realize Drake hasn't done drop.
It's coming, I'm sure.
No, but Drake has got this thing that he does. He's like Michael Jackson in that he's a pop artist. Like, what's hot right now?
Right.
So if it's I know what's going to happen is when drill is hot, he's going to start doing drill. But I also kind of feel in a real way that Drake... Like Michael Jackson understands the art. The art is the more important than the sound. So therefore, when you understand what the art is in terms of dope it is, you create better sound because you sound more authentic.
You've taken me to the right person. Michael Jackson. What was the difference between Prince and Michael Jackson?
I'm a Prince guy.
Do you know why your Prince was a... Prince was a purist.
No, you and Dizzy Don have got the same idea.
Prince was a purist.
No, I refuse that argument.
Look,
Michael Jackson's an icon. You cannot compare
to
Prince.
Prince is an icon.
Prince is not competing with Michael Jackson.
No. They were not competing. But the thing that would stand out about Prince after you experience him is how great an artist he was. But after you experienced Michael Jackson, the thing that you would get from Michael Jackson was not how great an artist he is how great this experience was.
No.
That's why the Michael Jackson.
I felt that with Purple Rain. No. I felt that with Prince. But a lot of people tell you that they felt.
Which one was a bigger experience? The Michael Jackson experience or the Prince experience?
I think that they were different experiences.
Granted, but if Prince was to come to Zimbabwe.
Are you going to have the Winky D and Ja Praise argument right now? I feel like...
I'm not going to go there. They're the same person, Winky D and Ja Praise.
How are they the same person?
They're the same person in the same side. Their careers are curated the same way. They're just in different spaces.
Why aren't you saying that Michael Jackson and Prince are curated the same way?
Because the thing you would feel after you watch Prince or you listen to Prince...
People say to themselves, the thing I feel about Ja Praise
bro,
is that I feel he's deeper in African issues.
No.
And Winky D is more urban.
No. Don't take it from a Ja Praise and Winky.
No, I just gave it.
You're robbing us of a very beautiful debate.
If you bring those two to the... I'm just saying
how dare you? Actually, how dare you?
I'm just saying that right now... It's possible that argument can be made.
Prince
using the same characters.
Prince was a great artist up until the point where Prince is the guy where on stage he's gonna play you the guitar, he's gonna sit on the piano, he's gonna go 3-7 octaves high and a lot of that. Great, but how many people they can sing along to Prince songs? And how many people they can sing along to Michael Jackson songs? If you were to give people to a Lifetime concert and say, buy one ticket between Michael Jackson or Prince, how many people would buy the Michael Jackson ticket first or 5 times before they think of Prince? That's not that Prince is not a great... So, artistry, if they were to say pound for pound artistry, maybe Prince is a greater artist.
But
Michael
MJ was a fucking brilliant artist.
He was.
Oh, you said greater.
No. Yeah, he was a greater experience. He was... The Michael Jackson experience was more pronounced. That's why he was the king of pop. Pop simply means popular culture.
What is popular
culture
at that point?
Yeah,
if
popular
Sungura,
culture.
He would do Sungura.
Yes. He was the king of popular culture. He was pop culture. He was more impactful than Prince ever was.
So you're saying Drake is just the pop hero of the 2000s?
So between... Drake is the king of pop. Like, Drake, guys...
Drake. It's like how when AKA transitioned from being a rapper and said, I'm pop.
So I remember that period. So it's 2013. AKA releases what's this song? Congratulate.
Congratulate.
I was like, something has... This guy is no longer hip hop.
There's a thing that when me AKA changed me in my life is like when I'm sad for him because I know a lot of people are saying a lot of things about his unfortunate situation earlier.
Right.
And I think it's, unless you have the evidence,
it's quite just, unfortunate, yeah.
Like, you know, especially the fact that he has needed to go and disappear for everybody. He's going to...
What do you think about cancel culture whilst you're still in that neighborhood?
It's gay. It's stupid.
It's stupid.
Because if you disagree with somebody, it doesn't mean they have to lose their job.
Yeah. Plus, what type of world should we all have the same opinion? Why?
I have people
how can you not love
I
diversity?
Strongly disagree with, but yeah, they're my friends.
And you love them to death.
And I would go to war for them.
That's the point.
And that's what makes us beautiful, because we disagree.
Diversity. So people who don't like diversity are the people who are racist.
I'm like, yo, and there's people who just like, oh, but that guy just did to you is racist. And he's my friend. Like, yo, but you realize he's part of the white monopoly. No. I understand why we can do that with me and my homie. I would have a problem if some random white guy came and did it to me.
Yes. And so...
But I love my homie.
How can you not love diversity?
Diversity is what makes us strong.
How can you not... What makes this beautiful is that there is green, there's not even just one shade of green.
And then the ground is brown.
It's brown. And
the sky is blue.
There's yellow.
And there's like flowers that are blue.
Bruh.
And purple. Look, for me, I've never understood cancel culture because I watch, if I go to YouTube, I watch videos I disagree with.
I'm like, okay, let me just understand your point. Maybe I don't get something.
Plus, since when do we cancel people for being, for misstepping? Is that not whole, the whole essence of being human?
And isn't what the reason why, if you look at Zimbabwe, black people were cancelled because they were not like Rhodesians, like the white Rhodesians.
Bruh.
That's why they were cancelled, because you don't conform to the culture.
To the culture, so we're gonna.
So why are we then gonna cancel Vander Merwe's kid because we don't like what he did? I'm like, no. Maybe sometimes Vander Merwe's kid is just ignorant. He just doesn't know better.
How about we educate him?
I know, like, for example, when I go to what's the name of that place? The tin roof.
Mm-hmm.
I've had white chicks touching my hair. I'm like, because I've never seen a guy like me.
And
it's not because they're touching my hair because it's racist.
Mm-mm.
It's because they're like, I don't know.
It's a different experience.
It's a different experience. She's not being racist. She's just never seen it. She's ignorant about it. And so you could just say, oh, shit, why didn't you touch the white guys? I'm like, no. What she's actually going through is a situation where she's like, I remember when I was taking pictures at Haifa, the German band Jammerang was performing. And I'm taking pictures, and this is little 12, 13, 15 year grabbing my hair, like, while I'm taking pictures. And someone said, don't you think that's terrible, the fact that they're treating you like an animal at a zoo? I'm like, what do you mean? They are kids. They don't know. They have never seen it.
Maybe this person has never interacted or been close to a black person ever in their life.
Yes. And it's not their fault, because they're like 12... And whatever societal constraints that have been there, it's not that they're being horrible.
Cancel culture is stupid. Like, it's so stupid. I hate it.
But before we get, because we can talk about cancel culture for a while, and I want to ask, what are you working on? What should people be looking out? Because you're always working on something. Are you going to do another EP, or are we going to finally get an album?
Finally, I'm going to release an album this year, because this is my 10th year. As a spoken word artist, as a poet, professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to release my debut album this year.
Does it have a name?
Into Me C.
Into Me C.
Into Me C. I was debating.
It just sounded like a
Into Me C. Into Me C. Intimacy.
Into Me C. Oh, shit.
Intimacy.
You shouldn't just
so Into
them here.
Me C.
Yeah.
So see Into Me. So I'm honest about a lot of cool things in there. And it's probably my only album. Then I stopped pursuing excellence within the poetry and spoken word space.
What else are you working on?
Then I eventually interviewed Delani Makalima.
Dope.
So that's coming. We're working on a dancehall. The origins.
Tell us, by the way, the YouTube channel.
So Profound TV on YouTube. The Profound One on all social media networks. Holla at me. Let me know what it is.
So Delani.
Delani is coming.
It's on the same channel as Chamembe.
Chamembe and everything. Delani is coming. We're working on a podcast network that's coming too.
Mm.
And more importantly, a lot of good content. We've got a series coming. It's called After the Noise, the podcast, and everything. All coming.
So coming soon. And your Twitter, Instagram?
The Profound One on all social media networks.
Before we go, why the Profound One?
Because I'm so profound.
I'm the profound man because I'm so profound.
I'm the profound one.
Hey, fam, thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely. I always enjoy this. When are we doing this again?
We're doing it like when the Delani Makalima comes out.
Please, let's do it.
We're going to do that.
Because we didn't even talk about AKA or cancel culture or pop culture. Or
yeah, well, that's a different one. And then... Bless.
Bless, always.
Be blessed. Pray hard. If you don't pray hard, ask your mama to pray hard for you.
And that's it for this week's episode. Add us to your podcatcher or on iTunes now so that you can make sure you never miss out on another second of our wonderful podcast. We would hate for you to miss out. Have a great week, everyone.